Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Ray Penny with New Jersey School Board Association. Welcome to our podcast program, Conversations on New Jersey Education. It's an opportunity for you to meet educational leaders throughout the state or talk about education issues that affect all of us in the education community. If you want to participate or pass a question on to our guests, you can log into our chat room feature. You have to register with Blog Talk Radio. And you just type the question in and I'll pass it on. Or you can dial 1-347-989-8904 and then press the number 1. And I will that will give Robin, who's monitoring our switchboard, the opportunity to get your question, and I'll put you up. Today, we have a very special guest. Her name is Marie Bliston. She's the president of the New Jersey Education Association. Welcome, Marie. How are you?
Oh, thank you, Ray. I'm very well, thank you, and very pleased to be on your show. Thank you for inviting me.
And I hope your husband and your fellow officers, actually everyone at the staff at NJA, is doing well, too. We miss seeing everyone.
At Christmas month. Yeah, I know. We talk frequently, the education stakeholders groups. We're all talking about every week, which is, I think, been a very positive thing on all of our parts, coming together for the common purpose that on why we all exist, which is our kids and our families.
I want to talk a little bit about your membership, just to start off, because, this pretty much their work, the way they deliver their work, how they deliver their lessons, pretty much changed almost literally overnight. So everything that they – and they weren't planning about this back in September. I can guarantee you that. Do you feel that your membership has really adjusted to this?
Yeah, so I'm also a classroom teacher. I spent well over 35 years in the classroom, and I had the – privilege and the honor of actually teaching all kids sometime at some point between kindergarten and 12th grade. And I taught regular ed and special ed. So I come from a perspective that I absolutely understand what that switch was like for our members. And as a classroom teacher, and from what I've heard speaking to them, when we talk about online instruction and distance instruction, there's, to me, as a classroom teacher, there's really two aspects, right? There is the instructional component of where I have to create a lesson plan or a unit plan to instruct or educate on the concepts. But then now there's a second component that I don't have too much control over, different from when I had my students in my classroom, and that is the online learning and distance learning that has to take place. We don't all have the same materials at home. Our families have come from a variety of backgrounds and live in a variety of areas. Some areas actually don't have good internet access. And so all those considerations now have to go into my instructional plan that I had originally planned at this point in the year, right? I probably had pretty much a good idea of what I was doing from March until June. That had to be transferred into this online distance instruction, but also I had to take into consideration that learning aspect and how I was going to be able to monitor and then adjust what I was doing. So the leap of change for our educators across the board, it has been probably something that no one would have ever thought that we could accomplish. Yet, we have. Look, there's still some kinks. It's not perfect. Each day, each week, it's getting a little bit better as we're finding more and more platforms that we can utilize with our students. It's still not what we do every day. It's not the best, but it's something that we can do in this emergency situation. And I think overall they have risen to the challenge. We talk often, Ray, you and I, about collaboration, and I just made a mention of the work that the stakeholder groups have been doing at the state level, us with school boards, with principal supervisors, with the PTA, superintendents, and so on. That collaboration I've seen more often than not across the state with boards of ed, administrators, the educators, unions, and the staff just working more together than they ever have. Because, you know, when Governor Murphy says we're all in this together, I think he says it every day, that's the truth. We are all in this together.
Yeah, I would have to say in my time with the School Board Association over 20 years, I don't think I've seen this collaboration, and not just at the state level, between the education groups, which I think has occurred as well, but I think down at the local district level, I've been speaking with superintendents, and they have just said, everyone just stepped up to the plate. It's like, we have the same goal. How do we teach these kids? And and some of the teachers, one of the things I am, and this might be something you're proud of, is teachers all have different comfort levels with technology. Some of them, you know, it comes natural and others don't. But what one of the superintendents said to me is they've been helping each other. The ones that have a more comfort level have really helped their colleagues. Have you heard that?
Yeah, we have. And we have also, we're a pretty big organization. We have a whole division dedicated to professional development. We have another division developed to communication. And we have another division developed dedicated to technology, right? And so all three of those groups got together, and we have put up some resources on our NJEA page that I think they're exemplary. In fact, I talked to some national presidents and national groups, and I don't think many states have what we have. I'm just going to put a plug in here, right? Like, I'm so proud of, because of all the work we've been doing, we are rated number one in the United States, best quality public schools. And I think we can all take a step back and say right now, for sure, it's been the reason we have it has been because of all the people that we have involved that, you know, produce and create these educational programs here. But on our particular page, we have resources not just for academics, but also we have resources now for social and emotional. Because if you ask me, you know, when we talk about how did we transfer into this mode, one of the biggest challenges that our members have said right from the beginning was that they weren't as much concerned about the academics as they were concerned with the social, emotional aspect. Those areas where we can connect daily with our kids, with our students, we can only do it virtually, and only can do it virtually for those that can connect. And I know that's another very strong common area with us in school boards. I've said before, I read your report, I think it came out within this last year, on the social-emotional aspect of and instructional needs of students, and I applauded that report that came from school boards because it is paramount with us. In addition to those resources, we have we're connected with the New Jersey Center for Teaching and Learning, headed by Dr. Bob Goodman, who was one of our former State Teachers of the Year. And he has online curriculum and instructional units that are free to the public. He has units, and we have them on our website, that are available not just for students as supplemental, not just for our educators, our teachers who would deliver instruction, but there are supplemental things and guidelines and resources for parents at home. So I think that's been a very good outcome of this that we offer. And I'll have to put a plug in, Ray. I'm sure that you've seen the NJTV Live show.
That was going to be my next question.
Go ahead.
No, why don't you talk about that partnership with the DOE and NJTV. Kind of like an all-star cast.
It's just mesmerizing. So I try to watch. Well, I will tell you. So what it is we have our State Teacher of the Year, Kim Dickstein, which, you know, we all collaborate when we make those choices. She's a teacher from Haddonfield down in Camden County. She is on her half-year sabbatical working at the DOE. The DOE, Commissioner Repelet, all of you, we're working together to produce a TV show through NJTV, and kudos to them. Some people call it the educational channel, you know, was where originally Sesame Street from many years ago mm-hmm. started, but that's the TV show. That's the TV channel. They produce a show starting at 9 o'clock in the morning for grades 3, 4, 5, and 6. Each one is an hour-long program, and Kim and her cohort have arranged for teachers from around the state to teach lessons, supplemental lessons, in various subjects. Today, I can't catch it all day, you know, for the 4 hours every day, but today I caught two of the programs. One was a physical education teacher who was doing a dance routine and, you know, trying to get movement inside of her living room with the students. She had music. It was a blast. I was on it for a while. The next hour, there was an art teacher showing very meticulously and step-by-step how to do the scene that she had started. I've seen lessons where, I saw a lesson, I guess it was last week, the week before, social studies lesson on the Underground Railroad. I don't know how these teachers did it, but they showed one place down here in South Jersey where I live that was one of the first stops of the Underground Railroad. The teacher had a screen in back of him where he actually showed the church. And then they took a virtual tour of the church. Then they went to the next stop, and it was a different teacher up in Burlington County. And again, they had the screen in back of the teacher where the second stop was. And then they took – it was mesmerizing. Another episode I saw was a science teacher, and she had her three kids who were her students around the dining room table. And of course, that was the language arts lesson. But another one they did have, she also had her children involved in the science experiment in the kitchen. So we're getting rave reviews. Parents are able to use it because one of the things that we're finding, and I'm sure your members have said the same, is the instruction is going on during the day at various times. Kids may only have one device, right, at a time. They may not all have devices where they can tune in. And this at least allows the children that are not on the device with the instruction, this still gives them something to do. The content is all still aligned with our Common Core standards in this state, and they're just exemplary. So thanks for asking about that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I want to go into it because you brought it up. I think everyone's doing the best they can, and they're doing actually an excellent job. But what are some of the concerns that you have that you've heard from your members, that your association has as we move forward, whether it's the budget, whether it's the achievement gap? What are some of the concerns that you have as we move forward with this and maybe even going into next year?
Well, you know, again, when we talk about this technology divide, that's just become more and more apparent. It's not even that everyone doesn't have a device, but that internet connectivity, that service is also not available. Not everybody has it, and it's also not available. And there have been various things that have been put into place to try. We've actually had school buses that have driven to certain areas that have a hotspot, so that students in the community can at least get some access. We've had some companies that have volunteered or donated some of that availability to some of those areas. We've talked about, I'm hearing talk that maybe we should take the internet service and it needs to be utilized or looked at more as a utility that is a necessity, like we use electricity, right, or we have running water. Those are issues that are going to come up in front of us. I know that when we were on a call with the school boards a couple weeks ago with our senators, our Senate leaders, and they asked us what some of those questions were, some of those things that we were seeing, so that at least when we do come out of this, we can look back and we can address it so that, heaven forbid, but if we're in this situation again, we're going to be much better prepared. And they're looking to form a task force, in fact, to cover some of those areas. So I think that when you talk about budgets, I think all districts, when we do get back and we're going to try to build in as soon as we can, some capability for every student to have a device that they're going to be able to utilize at home. I think that's going to be one of the givens, and it's going to be a cost factor. When we look, when you bring up budgets, we're all concerned about the budgets. We're concerned with the public revenue that's coming in. I saw that the governor has formed a task force on the economic recovery for the state. I saw Senate President Sweeney did the same thing, and then I saw yesterday that Speaker Coughlin also has a group he's putting together, and I'm sure at some point both houses and the governor will get together with their findings so that they can make the best projections. We know that we have some federal money coming in, but I think we all know that that's not going to be enough to fill the gap, and I think there's going to be a transitioning period as we move forward. I am happy to hear and see that the governor, Senate President Sweeney, and Speaker Coughlin are looking for ways to bridge the gap that we're going to have right now from local, county, and state revenue. And I will just say one of those, I'm very proud that one of the things that we have worked out with Senate President Sweeney is a health care bill that once it goes through the House, governor signs it, it's going to provide over $1 billion in savings every year in health care costs, which is some of that is going to be, I think 600 will be dedicated, be provided back to the local districts, which right now this couldn't come at a more opportune time. Some of those savings, of course, will be had by our members that had been wrapped by Chapter 78. And whenever we're looking at lowering health care costs, still providing quality health care, but lowering those costs, that's a win-win for everybody, school boards, us, taxpayers. So when we're looking at those things, I think that when there's common ground, I think that there'll be ways that we're going to get through this.
And you and I were talking earlier before we went on about, and do you think maybe the education, Governor Murphy's indicated he thinks the federal government should send some aid to the state governments, not just New Jersey, but all state governments.
Right.
Is that something that we'll probably need to be advocating for as we move forward? Because, the anticipation is that the state revenues may be not what we thought they were going to be in February, at least.
Yeah. Totally support him with those requests. And I know that the legislators are doing the same, as are all of our congressional people down in Washington, D.C. Our state has been one of the hardest hit in the United States. And I know the president did say that money that would go to the priority states that have been hit the hardest. And I think outside of New York, we're it. We are absolutely it. So am hopeful that it's still going to take some advocacy on all our parts, Ray, but I do believe that when we can come together and we have common ground, that things can and will get accomplished. But it is going to be on all of our parts to demand that we get those resources here.
I have a couple questions in the chat room. One of them was about Governor Murphy. In the legislature, push the timeline back for the state budget. Do you think we'll have an idea of what the state aid's going to be? What are you looking at? I mean, is it going to be around August that we'll have a better idea, or is that May 22nd statement by the treasurer something that we should all be listening to?
Well, what I understand, at least at this point, is that there will be two budgets. One budget will be to get us between now and September 30th. And then from September 30th until June 30th of 21 would be the second budget from the state. And that is to really allow them to get a full picture of what we are looking at here in the state regarding revenue. And quite honestly, I know that they are counting on the federal government providing what they should for the state so that we can plan forward.
Okay. Another question, and this is probably a health and safety. What, and I don't think you have a position, but what are your thoughts about when we should return physically to our schools, students and staff?
Mm-hmm. Well, we advocated. Ray, I think the governor, when he announced that he was going to close schools, he did it in a very deliberate way. We advocated at that point when we saw what was happening and what the dangers were with the virus. We advocated, of course, for the closing of schools when he did it, and he did not do it right away. He waited a few days saying that the schools were going to be closed. And during that time, schools began to close down across the state from north, middle, and to the southern part of the state. And why he did that was to allow them time to put a plan together. I mean, as it was, they had about a week before we really realized how bad this was and was coming into our state, to try to put a plan together to equip the educators to go home with enough that they could provide instruction for at least 2 weeks. And we were told right from the beginning it might be more than 2 weeks, but prepare at least for 2 weeks. And then also put all those plans into place to make sure that our students who were dependent on us for breakfast and for lunch, that we were still going to be able to provide that.
Yep.
So the state required all districts to come up with a plan to address it. And some of the districts, they just didn't have the resources to do it overnight. The ones that did got on it. The ones that didn't waited until, or at least got them up through, I think his date was March 18th, that all schools had to be closed. And I understand that the reason for that, and I also understand the reason why he has said that he's been coming out looking at the data, scientific data, and dependent on medical advice as to when schools would reopen and how. And he has said that repeatedly. I will say this about our governor. He does do his homework. I don't see that across the United States. I'll say that candidly. But I do see that is what he's doing. And our position is, and always has been and always will be, that the safety, the health conditions for our students and for our members is number one and has to drive all of those decisions regarding how and when school reopenings will take place.
My guess is the governor has that, the health and safety of the students and staff as on the forefront of his mind before he makes any decision.
Yep.
I have a comment. One of our state officers is called in. Bruce, did you have a comment for Marie?
Yeah,
Bruce Young,
I do have
from
a comment.
The Vice President for County Activities. I'm sorry.
Oh, hi, Bruce.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well.
First,
thank
you. I want to commend the teachers for a job well done so far. I find the biggest problem that we're going to have is with the internet connection. But so many people are saying that because they have 2, 3, and maybe 4 kids on at the same time, they're having a problem with the kids being able to maintain the internet connection. So that's another big issue. You know?
Good point.
I do have a question going back to the health that you brought up about Senator Sweeney and health benefits. How many of your organization will be taking advantage of that package that the senator is looking to put out there? Are we looking for 100% participation?
Well, first of all, the law, when the legislation, when it becomes law, will mandate that all new employees who are eligible for health benefits will go into that program. And what we know about it is that it will be a quality program, a mesh between NJ-10 and NJ-15, which most of our districts are in anyway. Whether they're in the state plan or whether they're in a private plan, they offer those types of benefit levels. And it's going to be a benchmark plan, Bruce. We know that there are some savings that we can put into place with that plan through the School Employees Health Benefits Design, the plan committee and the design committee, that will – save everyone money, but still, again, provide those savings. And I think as a benchmark plan, which years ago that is what the state health plan was, when it was called
right.
the state health plan, there were benchmark plans, but allowed
right.
districts to and locals okay. to negotiate with private carriers. But it was a benchmark plan,
right.
and I believe that that's what this one will do. And there were
okay.
two sets of actuaries, by the way, that worked with the senator on, and us
mm-hmm.
on development of this legislation, and both of them came to the same conclusion. So we're very confident that it's a savings plan, that it's a win-win.
Okay, very good.
Okay.
We're in a very good situation
okay.
up in Maywood and Becton. So we're going to be hiring some new teachers this year. So go on their website
yeah.
And you'll see a lot of new job openings up there. So.
All
right,
okay,
thanks,
I'll
Ray.
Pass that
okay.
on, Bruce. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
All right.
Okay, thanks, Bruce.
You got it, Ray.
Are there any other concerns that you have as we move forward? I'm looking at maybe if we open in the fall, what were some of the concerns that you might have then?
Well, I think, you know, depending on how they open, we're going to have to prepare our students, our staff, and our communities for that transition. Again, this has been, listen, this is like no other worldwide thing in my lifetime, and yours as well. There's going to be some aftershock from it. I mean, we're losing people, right? You know that as well as I do. We're losing
yep.
family members. That and people, they're not even able to grieve properly. Our kids are home in these settings where we can't bury people whom we've lost through this virus or even just through natural causes separate from this. That's going to be carried back into those classrooms in our schools. And I think one of the areas that we've got to take as a priority, all of us, is we're going to have to look to see what resources we're going to be able to put into place immediately to address that end. As again, I'll go back to my classroom teacher days. I've always said, listen, I knew my subject area, and I certainly had my classroom instruction planned out academically, but that was not 50%. I better have 51%, where I was addressing the social, emotional needs of those kids first and foremost. If I don't have them feeling that they are in a safe place and that they are ready to learn, I don't care what kind of lessons academically
mm-hmm.
I have that I can show. And I think that this is going to be true with all of us. We have communities in our schools that have lost members during these last 4 or 5 weeks. I mean, I'm making calls to our local president, right? Those are little home family communities. When they come back, those educators or they're just not going to be there. And so students are coming in who have lost family members. We are going to have to
mm-hmm.
deal with that first and foremost. And then at the same time, I think, not only transition back into what a normal schedule would look like, and we don't know what that's going to be, right, whether we're going to have
no.
distancing inside of those classrooms. I think they're looking at all of that at this point, if that's going to have to be, because we don't have a cure yet for this disease, for this virus. And we're also going to have to look at getting ready in case there's another shutdown. I mean, they're talking now about another wave of this virus coming in the fall or in the winter. We might have waves of this in communities where the schools will have to be shut down for a certain amount of time. We should be ready at that point on a dime, I think. It's in our best interest to transition for that time and then hopefully bring them back. Again, until we can get the massive testing that we need, get the immunity set up, and then get that cure. Once that cure comes into place, we're going to be good to go. But always know that there's going to be, as they're predicting, other things that we're not immune to, other pandemics.
Yep.
So that's, to me, what
it's a whole new world.
The biggest challenge. Yep. Yep. I agree. Yep.
And I just got a comment from in our chat room, a long one from our immediate past president, Dan Sinclair, thanking you for joining it. And he wants to thank you for the relationship between NJSB and NJEA. Sometimes I agree we're always defined by our differences, but sometimes there are a lot of common ground.
Go ahead.
Then I'll finish Dan's question.
Okay. We do have a lot in common. You know, I sat on the school board's task force to close the achievement gap. When I was first became an officer, and I was honored to be asked to do that, and loved doing that, and it was out of that relationship, and I think I was the only classroom teacher at that time that had been asked to serve on a school board task force. But we met Dr. Saul Rubenstein from Rutgers University, and he came in, Larry and. Larry brought him in, actually, as a consultant, right?
Yeah.
And we talked, and I realized he talked about something called labor management collaboration. And at the end of his presentation, I tell a story, as does Larry and everyone else. I was literally jumping out of my seat. I was so excited to hear about what he talked about. I know as a teacher, but also as a union leader all my years, by the way, I knew that that was the best way to work. I always worked that way. But I didn't leave a system in place, right? It was relationships that I had developed over the years with administration and school boards. And Dr. Rubenstein said that there were actually ways of doing this and providing systems. Well, today, and I think we're 6 years later, I'm telling you, we now collaborate. Dan knows well about this program. We have a labor management collaborative where we have 16 districts across the state that are involved right now, have been involved with training. We've been doing follow-up, by the way, with them on how they've been faring through this crisis. And we have found very significant and interesting results that their districts have a smoother transition, or at least they see themselves as having a smoother transition into dealing with this crisis. And there's been more of a collaboration on a lot of other areas that have resulted from it. We have, I think we have about 20 or 30 districts right now waiting to get involved in the labor management collaborative. And just so your listeners know, that's us, school boards, principal supervisors, association, the superintendents association. We started it, and we have developed into what is now being considered a national model. And the real good point about this is where we see we have labor management collaboration, and Dr. Rubenstein has proven over 20 years of research, there is automatic student achievement. Even in our hardest economic areas where there are more challenges than not, right? The collaboration forces student achievement. Another win-win.
Yep. So Dan's question, I'm switching you. First of all, he talks about that he thinks the education community has collaborated, as you and I said, to deal with the crisis. He's a little concerned about comments by Senator McConnell earlier in the week about not providing aid to the state governments. And he wasn't sure if you knew where our senators were on this. And you and I talked about this, but you might want to be are our senators supportive of federal aid for state governments?
Yes. Thanks, Dan, for asking. Yeah, Ray and I talked before we started the program today. We had actually provided we reached out to both the U.S. Senators, Menendez and Booker, and asked them if they would be willing to do a statewide call with our members on the first three bills that were the recovery or the Recovery Act, right? And they jumped at the chance, and I invited members from school boards, all the league group, right, principal supervisors, PTA, superintendents, to also join us, at least from state level. And we had, probably a few thousand people on that call, and they explained it, and they were advocating very hard for more money, even if this was about 2 weeks ago. Since that time, we also reached out to Congressman Norcross and Andy Kim, and they are going to do similarly, where they're going to reach out to our members. Congressman Norcross made it clear. He said, look, we had to fight hard to make sure that we got money. And of course, you know, my specific area is education, our public school districts, but he did talk a little bit about the business community and so on. But he said, on Norcross, he said, we're going to need more money. He said, we're going back right now. In fact, they think they just voted on that bill. Was it yesterday? Second bill. And smaller amount. But he said, that's not going to be enough either. And we're going to have to demand that the federal government step up to the plate. And where Mr. McConnell would say anything about states going bankrupt, I was equally as appalled as what our governor was. And I have not seen our governor as upset about many things as what I saw when he had to respond to a statement that is very hard to believe coming from an elected official.
Yep. Okay, I have another caller, Debbie, from South Plainfield. Debbie, are you there?
Yes, I am. Yes, Ray, I want to thank you for doing this podcast along with all the other ones that you do. And thank you for having Marie Bliston on. Marie, thank you for expressing your concerns and your thoughts. As president for the past 4 years of Middlesex County School Boards, hearing people from all over the state, from the boards, talk about how phenomenal all the teachers are. And near and dear to my heart in South Plainfield, I see how everybody collaborates together. Our SPEA president, Diana Jaffe, our vice president, Sandy Doyen, their passion for their staff, their administrators, for their students. I think that everybody just dove in, did not look back, and proceed to educate these children however they have to do it. And I think everybody all over the state, including my school district, has done a phenomenal job. So thank you.
Debbie. You saying it. Yeah, I've traveled to South Plainfield a few times. I know Diana, I know Sandy, I know the EA members there, and I totally agree with you. But I also want to take a moment to thank school board member and for your work with at the county level. People don't all realize that school board members do not get paid for their work and their job. And they have probably, I think, the biggest responsibility in any community. You are responsible for the health and the welfare and the education of the next generation of our society. So I want to take a moment to thank you for your work and everything that you've done. Thank you.
Okay. Marie, did you start as a special ed instructor?
I did, yep. When I came out of college, I started in special ed, yep.
Yeah, that's what I thought. And so do you have concerns? Because most of for the special ed students, because I do know all special ed teachers I know are kind of like really hands-on instructors.
And
the kids need it. Is that one of your worries as we move forward those kids?
Absolutely. And, again, trying to reach them remotely with kids who are used to and need a one-on-one paraprofessional sitting right beside him or her, right? That can't happen. They can't physically be there. So how do you transfer that through a screen? And, again, if those kids are even able to access those screens. So I will tell you that I just saw on we have a website, I think I mentioned it, called NJEA Together, and we have our members. We just created it, actually, for this crisis, where they're able to share best practices, communicate with each other, and we have so many people contributing to it right now. Our website is changing pretty frequently, but yesterday or today, I saw one from a special ed teacher by the name of Skirps, Henry Skirps, up in Belvedere, actually. And he is a special ed teacher. He has a little video. And he had tips for us as educators. And one of them was, I thought, was pretty interesting, because we have to get pretty creative, right? He said, you know, I found a long time ago that kinesthetics, getting kids up and moving other body parts or using all their senses, is a great learning device for some students who are challenged that way. So he said, so I taught my students sign language when we pledged allegiance to the flag. Well, he's doing that now, of course, virtually. Another thing that he said was he found a website for visually impaired students. So, look, when we're in our buildings, we are able to produce documents that are enlarged or have a device in front of that student that has the script, right, enlarged. He said he was able to find a website that he could use with his students, also have his parents use it. And then he also found a website that would take things for parents, again, for students at home, take, you know, preparation for tests and quizzes. They could take the content and it would change it into a review in the form of a game. So I'm just going to say, as an educator, they were all tips and tricks and resources that I used, and I would make those games up, as many of us did. Of course, we can't do that now. He has found these resources for them. I've also, though, also been concerned about the instructional oversight that our child study team people use with our teachers, the whole IEP team, which is made up child study team, case manager, our educator. It's made up principal supervisor, right, a parent. And usually, when appropriate, the student. And how are those things going on? I've been talking to some educators, child study team people across the state, and what they have done is, again, because of their great innovation, they're doing them remotely. They're making phone calls weekly. They are having meetings remotely with the IEP team, trying to accommodate as best we can. There's going to be gaps here. There's no question about it. When we come back in the fall, we're going to need to take a look at where are our students, where were they when we left, where are they now, and now what are we going to put into place to try to bridge that as they move forward, which is going to be another, when you talk about challenges, when we come back in, it's going to be another challenge. One of the other areas is with the students who are just signing up to come into school, right? We have preschool, we have kindergarten students, some of whom are in need, they're challenged right now, that we would normally do testing for, right, so that we could provide early intervention services. When I talked to school nurses, one of the things that they were doing, again, was reaching out with the administration to the parents of incoming students, because kindergarten registration, like, this is the prime time, right, for that. And we usually assess hearing and vision. Of course, we can't do that very well remotely, but at least we can start to pull in the population and talk to parents and see where they are, see how they're making out, and seeing what else we're going to need when we come back in the fall.
Okay.
Make up for them.
We're coming to the end. I just want to pass a remark on. We don't have to comment on it, but I think we all have the same concern. Jason is a teacher in a former Abbott district. He's also a newly elected school board member. He's concerned that this pandemic is exacerbating the achievement gap, and I think that's something that, you know, everyone's a little bit concerned with. So any final comments that you have and recommendations that you have, Marie, because we have like less than a minute?
I would say please come on to our website, NJEA Together. We do have resources there for parents, for students, for our educators. And we also have a thank you. Thank you for an educator. But I also want to take the time again to thank all you, Ray, for having me here, all the school boards, all the education stakeholder community for the work that we've done. And I am confident that when we move forward, we will continue that collaboration for the best interest of our students.
Yes, and I think the success we've seen has been because it's been a collaborative effort mm-hmm. at all levels. And I think that we're going to need that, particularly in September. So that brings us to the end of the program.
Absolutely.
I hope everyone enjoyed it. And I want to thank Marie Blisson for joining me. Thank you, Marie.
Thank you, Ray. Thank you, everyone.
Okay, and everyone have a good afternoon.